Welcome into All Ball. I'm Doug Gottlieb. You can check out the Doug Gottlieb Show every day, 3 to 6 Eastern Time on Fox Sports Radio. And, of course, on your iHeartRadio app, you can listen to us on Sirius and XM. Channel 203, I believe, is the XM channel. Follow me on Twitter, at Gottlieb Show. There you go. Now we're done with the pleasantries. Two topics I want to get to here in All Ball. The first is transferring and the mess that's made of college basketball. Listen, I fully understand and respect that there's a sense from fans that college basketball is just kind of a way station to get to the NBA. And on some levels it is. Look, I'm not going to lie to you and sit here and tell you when I came out of high school, I didn't think ultimately I'd have a shot to play in the NBA, the league. Just want to get to the league, want to get to the league. The reality of it is the numbers bear out to where it's really hard to get to the league. Now, it's not necessarily difficult to play professional basketball to make a living. I mean, it's difficult, but it's not like impossible. But to make it in the NBA, it's next to impossible in terms of the numbers, right? 350 some odd Division I schools, almost all of which offer a scholarship, or even the Ivy League now offers financial assistance, completely covering things up to, what, 75 grand a year, if your parents make up to 75 grand a year. So let's say there's 345 schools that offer, even 350 that offer, you know, 13 scholarships apiece. Meanwhile, there's 450 NBA jobs total. And even if you expand that when you're talking about the G League and whatever, look, we're talking 1% of the college basketball players, right? One. That's what we're talking about. So those numbers are, it adds up to being really, really hard. It's just hard. 30 first-round draft picks, five of which usually come from overseas. Guys are fighting over 25 locked-in jobs. And even those jobs don't have great long-term security. So I know that there's this, hey, you know, college basketball players, they're just crushing it for their schools. Look, college basketball programs don't make that much money for their schools. They just don't. Their TV deals don't. The NCAA tournament does, and that money gets redistributed to NCAA schools, and, of course, they spread that out not just to basketball but to all other sports. But the reality of it is college basketball programs generally don't make a ton of money for their schools. Are they keeping their head above water? Yes. Are they making money? Sure, most of them are, especially the good ones really, really are. But it pales in comparison to football. And the interesting part about it is you actually get to know the basketball players more than you get to know the football players, right? Like, ask yourself right now, how many college basketball faces and names do you know? Now do the same thing for college football. And yet college football makes a ton more money, not just because of the stadiums, but the value of having those games on TV because the ratings are exponentially higher. But whether it's football or it's basketball, anybody in the sport knows this. And they may not say it in front of a microphone, but they'll say it to everybody off mic, which is the transferring thing is a problem. It's a huge problem. And we can say, well, you know, coaches shouldn't hold players hostage. Most coaches don't hold you hostage. They may want you to grow and mature and have an ultimate plan in place for you to win your job. But if you're not as good as they would have thought, they probably don't want you to hang around. They're not holding you hostage. On the other hand, no one has any patience at all towards sitting and waiting. Now, full disclosure, okay, this is just me being honest. I wasn't going to a school where I was going to sit. I wasn't. I remember Mike Montgomery called me from Stanford, and his basic spiel was like, look, this is the best school on earth. We got great players. We got great guys. We're going to win. We're going to play in the NCAA tournament. You're going to back up Brevin Knight for 2 years, and then it'd be your job to start for 2 years. You could play with Brevin Knight some, but you're mostly going to be a backup. You know, you'll play 10 to 20 minutes, maybe sometimes over 20 minutes in a game. And then when he's gone, you'll play over 30 minutes and be our starting point guard. I wasn't into it. And so I said, thanks, but no thanks. They moved on. They signed Art Lee. Art Lee ends up leading them to a Final Four. This is a true story. Right? Why'd I go to Notre Dame? Because they had Admore White there. And I was told, like, hey, you're better than Admore White. You're going to start. your freshman year, we're going to be first year in the Big East. And it took me four games, and ultimately I became the starting point guard at Notre Dame. And even then I was frustrated, right? I was frustrated I had to wait four games. In hindsight, I probably didn't earn it in practice. Now, part of it was how we practiced. Part of it was my lack of experience in playing what I would call real basketball. So I understand the lack of patience that scholar athletes have. When they sign in college, they sign thinking they're going to go and be stars. And some of it is the sale that's made by the coaches. Some of it is. Some of them are promises that are not kept. But some of it also is the, hey, man, it's going to work in the end. You know? It's going to work out for you in the end. You're just going to have to trust the process a little bit. The crazy thing about how we've gone in college sports is we went from being so overwhelmingly pro-university in our rules to now it's the exact opposite. Now we're ridiculously pro-athlete. Ridiculously. The guys that benefit most from the current transfer rules are guys that transfer out before the end of their first year. Right? You go to a place and you stay for 8-9 games, and then you're like, I'm out. This ain't what I signed up for. And sometimes you do coaches a favor. But oftentimes they sit there and go like, we can't go on the waiver wire and pick a guy up. If we pick up a transfer, you know, 9 games, and he has to sit a year. If you say you're coming for a year, you're coming for a year. You don't have to guarantee us you're going to stay for the rest of your life and stay on campus for 15 years and get a doctorate. But if you say you're coming for a year, guys that leave after their first semester, after their first year, they benefit the most because now they can go to a second school, redshirt, improve, play, graduate, and transfer to a third school. And the thing about transferring is this, and this, no one will tell you this except for me and people being real. Once you leave a school, you're kind of done there. You just are. Like, I have great friends from my time in Notre Dame. Fran McCaffrey recruited me. He is a dear, dear friend. If he needed anything, I would go there. If I needed anything, and I called on him. And, you know, I interviewed for a college coaching job. The guy who gave me just talked to me for hours on end was Fran McCaffrey. Because he totally knows me. I mean, recruited me every day when I was in Southern California. Knows me as a human being. Knows me in terms of my basketball vision is. Knew my father so well. Ryan Hoover, who was my two guard, Pat Garrity, who is our starting power forward. Like, those guys are, Antoni Weiss, who was in my freshman recruiting class. These guys are very dear to my heart friends. And then some of it is I got in trouble at Notre Dame. That's why I had to leave. But a lot of it is when you leave, you're kind of done there. And I think that's the interesting part that no one says about these grad transfers. You have guys that go to a place for, you know, I don't blame Matt Mooney, right? He has a nice career at South Dakota. He graduates. He transfers. He goes to Texas Tech. Now he gets a chance to play for Chris Beard. But you're not really a Texas Tech guy, and you're not really a South Dakota guy anymore. But it also makes it so it's incredibly hard to watch. Look, I've covered this sport for 15. This is my 16th season of doing anything covering college basketball. 16 years. It is ridiculously difficult to go, okay, wait, he played here, then played here, then played here. Like, it takes me as a broadcaster about a month to prepare for the season. And then even once the season starts, it's still Brandon Clark, he was at San Jose State, I remember. Boy, that sucks for Prelude when he got the job, then he lost Brandon Clark, and now he's a star at Gonzaga, right? Like, it takes a while for me to remember where guys are. And you know who else it takes a while? Fans. It makes it harder to coach, but more importantly, it makes it harder to root for. And among the things that hurt the college basketball regular season, because that's one of the arguments and excuses made for college football not having a playoff, is, hey, we don't want our season to be like college basketball season. Well, is it fair that there are too many games on TV? Yes. Is it fair that you can finish below 500 in your conference? Is it fair to say that finishing below 500 in your conference doesn't signify having a great year? You shouldn't play in the NCAA tournament, but teams consistently have? Yes. And that obviously helps the football argument of, hey, we want our seasons and our conference play to matter. That's fair. But one of the missing parts of it is the thing about college basketball that's been different from NBA basketball is how close the students and the fans can get to the floor. Like, you feel like you're all kind of part of the thing, right? In addition to the guys are tied to their universities. And we do this, we do it on two or three different levels, right? When a player transfers out, we want to, fans and some media members want to make it so that guys can play right away. We do these things that actually encourages player movement and encourages players to leave or to go pro, that actually make it so that players respond in a way in which makes it more likely that they're going to go pro or they're going to transfer out. Perry Ellis stays 4 years in Kansas. And look, some of it was his hairline. But we make fun of it and say he's been there forever, right? I mean, I'm as guilty of it as anybody. We did it with Grayson Allen. How long has Grayson Allen been there? Oh, he's been, you know, and it's not a bad thing to stay in school for 4 years. It's just not. Additionally, you know, when guys don't go pro after their first year, we act like there's something wrong with them. You know, like how somehow there's something off there. Carson Edwards is a perfect example of why you don't go pro when everybody thinks you should go pro. He had a great year last year. Now, everything they do at Purdue is for him, and he's developed enough to where he can accept that role, and he's going to average over 20 a game in the Big Ten, might well be Big Ten Player of the Year, definitely be first team all Big Ten. But because the draft pool is slimmer this year than it was last year, a guy who's really an off-the-bench guard who can come in and score might sneak into the first round this year. But we make it out like, well, you know, you somehow weren't good enough, you're somehow not worthy, and if you don't leave as a one and done, well, you're never really going to be an NBA player. Well, that's just not true. That's not true. You know, this idea of guys that are pros, look, Bryn Forbes made himself into a pro. Should be pointed out, he transferred up a level, right? But Bryn Forbes has made himself into a starting NBA two guard. That's a pretty amazing story. We have gotten to this point where we're so pro player. You should have to sit out. Let me just state this really quickly. If you transfer and you have a sick mom or a sick dad or a sick grandparent, or you're just like super homesick and you want to make something up, if you really, really, really need to get close to home because of an unforeseen illness or death in the family, well, guess what? You should probably be taking time away from basketball to handle that too. There has to be some sort of logical buyout of a scholarship. It's a contract. It's the first one you sign. And we are not preparing basketball players for real life. And fans have no view of how it actually mirrors real life. No, they're not like regular students. You know, regular students, it is because, first of all, when a college athlete transfers into a school, admission is not difficult. When a student does, sometimes admission can be difficult. We make them pay all their bills, but we don't hold them to any sort of level of accountability with a contract that they signed. And you might say, well, college coaches, they leave. They have buyouts. That's what they have to do in order to get out of their contract. And oh yeah, by the way, they got to move their entire family. They got to figure out their staff. There's a bunch of moving parts. They're in charge. Do I think that when a coach leaves, a player should be allowed to leave? I'm fine with that. But the idea that a player can leave out of his scholarship, especially at mid-year or even at the end of the year, and one, play right away because he says he has a family member sick, or two, he gets the benefit of transferring early instead of seeing the process through. When he benefits early, he can transfer again. But all of it gives us this, with the exception of the Duke threesome, and maybe even throw Trey Jones in there as the Duke foursome, an amazing class. If it wasn't for Zion Williamson, who's a YouTube sensation, and as Jay Billis called him, a phenomenon, he really is a phenomenon, how much would you really care or pay attention in your early season college basketball compared to how you used to? Because you, in addition to not knowing the incoming freshman, you don't actually know many of the returning players because so many have transferred and they're wearing new uniforms. And there's people who this is the secret to college athletics that you're only going to hear here on All Ball. This is the only place you're going to hear it. Pick the team that you follow. You follow them. You're a fan of that team. Who goes to those games? Who watches those games on TV? By and large, people from that area, grew up in that area, or alums of that school, and sometimes alums of said conference school, or of the same of the opponent. If you grew up in the area, you're an alum of the area, you're a fan of you've always been a fan of the team, that's who watches. Look at every season ticket base. It's all the same. The people who go to those games go there because it's their school. Now, there may be more of them when they're winning more, and obviously having better players helps you win more, but this idea that the players' name and likeness matter is kind of laughable. What does matter is the players' name and likeness being tied consistently to the same university. Because when they transfer out, it's like a Where's Waldo trying to find these guys. And as a guy who's done it for 16 years, I can tell you it's increasingly difficult because you got 1,000 guys on Jeff Goodman's transfer list, and it grows every year. And it makes the sport worse. I'm only trying to help save the sport. I'm only trying to help you tell you that college basketball is awesome. I'd love to talk about Creighton and the transformation in Greg McDermott's coaching style from trying to get blood out of a rock when he ran a million sets in Northern Iowa to now where they play fun four-five-out basketball. I know they lost to Gonzaga, but that was a fun – that was a great – watch on a Saturday afternoon last week. But it's hard to get the mainstream fan to buy in because they don't know the players. The good ones, the great talents aren't there long enough. And the transfers make it so that even the rank and file guys, we don't know who they are or where they came from. There's no consistency of names being associated with the university, and so there's no ability to create any sort of fan base for a player, for a team. It hasn't been established by having wins. And the last thing I'll say is this. I think that what college basketball does is it grows your name, image, and likeness. It does. And the NBA should actually push for guys to stay in school more. Because when they do, they have a built-in fan base when they get to the NBA and that travels with them.
Let's welcome in Jeff Goodman from Stadium Sports, who called his first game ever with me, San Diego State. So in addition to being a Bostonian, in Southern California, during a rainstorm, you got a chance to call a game. How'd it feel?
It was good. It was good. It was actually, you made it fairly easy because
I talk a lot.
We've known each other a long time. I think we feel comfortable ripping on each other if we need to. We really didn't do much of it. We just had fun and told it like it is. And I think that's what we have always had in common, right? Like we tell it like it is. And some people hate us for it. Some people love us for it. It was fun, other than, again, the weather in San Diego was brutal. And even driving up to L.A., I got a triple header here tonight. Yeah. It was pretty bad. So people do not know how to drive in the rain at all around here.
I don't think anybody actually knows how to drive in the rain anywhere. Like, that's one of the biggest, they don't know how to drive. Of course they don't know how to drive in the rain in Southern California. It never rains. But it's not like there's anywhere where when it rains 3 inches in a day, you know how to drive. Let's get to some basketball topics. Vernon Carey ends up signing with or committing to Duke, right? And we're seeing these big three, could go 1, 2, 3 in the draft. And I want to get to your big board in a second, go to Duke. Why does it feel like, whether it's reality or perception, why does it feel like the pendulum has swung where Duke is now the landing spot for the top kids?
I'll give you three letters. USA. USA Basketball. That changed it for Kay. He could say what he wants that it didn't, but what it did is it took him from where he was number two to now he's clearly number one over Calipari. Calipari was the guy. I mean, listen, everybody knew it. Calipari was a hell of a recruiter at Memphis. Then he goes to Kentucky, and it's like the elite recruiter at the elite spot. Nobody's going to beat him. He showed that for years, but USA Basketball – they both have.
But
Nike,
he's been doing USA Basketball
Nike
for
pushes.
Jeff, he's been doing USA Basketball for over a decade. Only now has the pendulum swung, right? He had Kyrie Irving going back you know, 6-7 years ago. But, like, in this sure. one-and-done era, it does feel like something's changed. It's like, has Cal ticked people off? Is there something about Duke's success? There has to be something more than just, hey, you know, look, he's coach. He's not even coaching Team USA anymore. Like, that's the crazy part.
No, but he has been. And what I'm telling you is, like, the – you know, the help he's gotten from the people at USA Basketball yeah. has certainly aided his cause. I think, you know.
Yes, listen, all those junior – look, all those – here's the way it works, okay? All those junior national teams, whatever, like, you know, any coach who – you know, Kansas guys, of course, Bill Self, you know, took his team to the World University Games. And so even if it's not the big national team – it's the other national teams you get to try out for, work out for, practice against the big boys, whatever. Like, there are promises and hints made during recruitment, but it is fascinating. All right, your big board just came out at Stadium Sports. Who's the guy who's going to most surprise people that's on your big board?
I think it's two. It's probably Coby White. I think I have him at, like, 19, somewhere around that 20 range, and Jackson Hayes. Who's mid-20s, freshman at Texas, who most people don't even know who the hell he is. I mean, yeah. Big, athletic, averaged like 5 minutes a game as a junior in high school, and dad is a tight ends coach of the Kansas City Chiefs. Cincinnati Bengals, I think. I'm sorry. And those are the two that I think would probably have moved up the most for me from start. I had neither one of them in the first round. I had never heard of Jackson Hayes before, you know, 3 weeks ago.
I would agree with you. I went and saw him in Vegas, and I was blown away by Jackson Hayes. You're going to see the triple header tonight. I'll be doing halftime for one of the games. It's kind of a weird deal where the St. Mary's New Mexico game, I don't even know, like, that is that on ESPN Plus. Then we have kind of the middle game, and then the nightcap, which is Nevada and USC. We have the USC game, USC TCU. Let me ask you about Nevada. You a buyer into them getting to the Final Four?
Like, I'll say that they have a chance. I mean, if you're telling me, like, gun to my head, am I picking Nevada to go to the Final Four? I'm going to say no. But anybody, you know, these days, anybody has a chance. I mean, you know, Loyola went last year. To me, there's like three or four teams that are at a different level right now when you're trying to choose the top four teams to go to the Final Four. I mean, you've got obviously Gonzaga. Mm-hmm. They don't even have Tilly back. You obviously have Duke because of their talent. To me, you have to have Kansas, especially when Doak gets back. I talked to Bill Self yesterday. He doesn't feel like Doak will be 100% till after the new year. Doesn't even need him that much, to be honest. You could throw Dedrick Lawson at the five and be just fine. And maybe D'Souza comes back. We don't know yet with him. And then the fourth one to me is Virginia. And I think then there's a gap, a significant gap after that to the Tennessees, the Nevadas, the next tier, whoever you want to put in there.
Why do you hate the A-10 so much?
It stinks. It's so bad this year. Like, I've never figured out. Like, I
now, VCU did just beat Texas. I want to point that out, that VCU did. Did just beat Texas. I think
Texas
St. Louis
a tournament team?
Yeah.
Is Texas a tournament team to you?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Oh, come on. Absolutely?
Yes.
Absolutely. They are not absolutely a tournament team. They will be a fringe tournament team, most likely.
I don't know what happened when they came home from Vegas. They looked so good against Carolina. They have a big lead against Michigan State. Then they lose to Radford and VCU at home. Like, what in the hell is that?
That's what I'm telling you, though. Like, today, if they'd probably be in.
They beat Arkansas. They beat North Carolina. They're going to get in, and they're going to win, half their games in the Big 12. They're going to get it. Like,
they
got to
finish in the top half. They got to finish in the top half of the Big 12. That's not a given.
I don't even think you have necessarily had to finish top half, but yes, okay, it's fine. I don't think the Big 12 is outside of Kansas, you know, like, how good is Baylor? How good is West Virginia? How good is Oklahoma State, a team I thought would be better? They just lost to Tulsa. They've lost to Charlotte. They lost to Minnesota. So, what we were talking, how we get to Texas. Like, I get, look, here's what's happened.
Everybody.
What happened to the A-10, same thing that happened to the Missouri Valley. You know, you lose your top teams, and then you go and get you know, low majors to be in a high mid-major league, and it's going to take a while to adjust, and the league is down. But, look, I think St. Louis is pretty good. Davidson's not bad. I mean, they were embarrassing, obviously, against Purdue, but they've been good otherwise. And VCU's not terrible. The bottom of the league is really bad. I don't know what happened to George Mason. Obviously, the bottom's fallen out of George Washington, and LaSalle's a complete rebuild.
Listen, the bottom line, though, is, okay, your top teams have to be really good, right? Your top programs in the league.
Mm-hmm.
And Dayton has not been great, and VCU has not been great. It's like the Pac-12. Why is the Pac-12 stink this year? Because UCLA and Arizona aren't that good, period.
I think UCLA's talented. I think they don't have a point guard, maybe don't have great leadership. You know, Jalen Hand's not really a point guard.
Tiger Campbell was the key there. Right?
Yeah.
Tiger Campbell getting hurt was the key for UCLA. That might end up costing Steve Alford his job.
It's very, very possible. And I think Arizona's kind of surprising, right? Like, oh, yeah, by the way, he's a pretty good coach. Remember, they did just go to UConn and get a win. I mean, they lost to Gonzaga and to Auburn, two teams that could very well win their league. They beat Iowa State, who played well out there. And I know Iowa State's still without Wigginton. But, I mean, Arizona – but I'd agree with you. That's what happens. When the top teams are down, the perception of the league is down. All right, last thing before we let you go. Your National Player of the Year as of now. It's only a month into the season. Is who?
I'm going Rui Hachimura. I know you're going Trace Tinkle.
Here's my thing with Trace Tinkle. I'll talk about it after
I love it. I just love ripping on you for it.
That's no, it's just fun. He's a tremendous player who does three things really well. He scores, he rebounds, and he passes for a kid who's 6'8". And they're a good team, not a great team. But we do this thing in college basketball. We cover like 10 teams, and then we pick our player of the year from those 10 teams. That's it. That's what we do. Right? Like, Trae Young got a bunch of attention last year for leading the country in scoring and assists. His team sucked. But because his stats were so obscene, we felt compelled to put him on every list. Right? Whereas there are guys that actually had better years that might not have had those same stats.
No, listen. I love Trae Tinkle. I do. I think he's a terrific player. I would give it to Rui. Right now, the best player on the best team, and I know some people argue that he's the best player on his own team, but I would say he is. He's the best player on his own team. He's turned into an alpha dog, and we saw that with the game winner against Washington, and mm-hmm. that was always the big question. You know, I talked to him before the year, and he even said that. He's like, you know, in our culture in Japan, that's not how we're taught to be.
Yeah.
And Mark Few's been on him about that. You've got to be that guy. You've got to try to take over games. We need you to do that. And if he can be that, think all the other dudes are going to have. When Tilly comes back, we know Zach Norvell loves the big moment, right? He's fearless. Perkins likes it. I don't really want him taking it, but he has the cojones to take it.
Right.
And then, like, Corey Kispert's pretty damn good. Brandon Clark. I still don't know if Brandon Clark can really shoot it, but I don't think it matters.
No, they're tremendous team. In a day and age in which nobody has depth and few have depth with experience, they have both. And they're well coached. It's why I don't have any problem with people. It's not just that they beat Duke. It's that they beat Duke, and like Duke, I think they're both going to get better. They haven't topped out yet. One, because they hadn't had Killian Tilly, and two, because, you know, Brendan Clark's still learning to play at this level after playing at San Jose State previously. All right, dude, listen.
And Rui's only going to get better.
I completely agree. Their question is, who does take the big shot? Although you go back to the other night against Washington, and Rui took and made the big shot, although he's wide open, which was kind of surprising nonetheless. Enjoy Southern California. We can follow
guys
you
around him.
Follow you on Twitter.
Nobody
watch your stuff on Stadium, right? And read.
Yeah, we're gonna do another game together.
Yeah,
are we doing another game?
ODU somebody on
Marshall.
January 3rd.
Marshall, little John Elmore action there. So that'll be fun, and I'm gonna prep because I got to be prepared during the game with you.
That'll be fun. Thanks for joining us.
You got it, man. Later.
All right, a couple other things here on All Ball. No, the Lakers are not going to sign Carmelo Anthony. I've told you guys before, I've said on this podcast, other podcasts, their chemistry is outstanding. So just think of this as Dumb and Dumber, right? What are you thinking? One in a million? So you're saying there's a chance. Okay, fine. I actually think he could play in Golden State, like in a Maurice Spates, Mo Buckets role. Come off the bench, chuck a couple. If you hit some, you stay in. Like, I actually think they could use that kind of offense. I do. I will also say this. Like, we've gotten to this place where we
feel the need as media members to defame Kevin Durant, right? Because he thinks he's doing the world a service by calling out the sycophants of the world that follow LeBron James or the fans who, you know, honestly, like, here's the thing with KD. In many ways, he's right. He's saying things that you're not supposed to say, maybe you can't even say, but telling fans who are unruly and say ridiculous things to athletes, like, you sat next to these people before, they don't belong in an arena. Like, that's not the whole point of coming there. And there's a way to heckle and be funny, and there's a way to just be mean and cruel. And I think that's kind of what he's getting. Like, you're an adult. Don't MF me when I'm a player. I am a human being, even if we don't want them to act like human beings. But it's funny where we've gotten with KD, right? Here's a guy averaging 30 points a game. Think about this. Has anybody looked? He's averaging 30 a game. He's shooting 52% from the field, 34 from three, which is a little bit down. And he's shooting 93% from the free throw line, averaging 8 rebounds and 6.5 assists and a block a game. And I've seen people say, oh, yeah, you know, KD, he's just not that good. I'm like, what? Like, what? Excuse me? He's amazing. He's amazing. So what you have to do, and this is the – I encourage all my broadcasting friends who listen to this, and you should do this if you're just a civilian. But this is the challenge in my world, what I've always done, is, look, there's basketball coaches, basketball players that I don't like, guys that I do like. Can you evaluate fairly even if you don't like somebody or even if you do like somebody? And I think many media members, they can't. It's not just that they're homers. It's that if they feel like they're being called out by a guy, like, they're going to be – I've had beefs with Roy Williams before. I respect Roy Williams. I think he's done an amazing job throughout his career. There are times in which, up until recently, he kind of always played the same way, and I don't love some of the in-game substitutions. But I also haven't won, what has he won, 800, 900 games? Won 85% of his games? But, like, you know, these are, like, I don't allow any sort of pettiness, any sort of beef over, you know, the rumor that he might shut it down a couple years ago when his knees were bad and his best friend died and he took offense to it. Like, I don't allow that to affect my evaluation of Roy Williams as a coach, either all time or his team this year. But most people can't. They can't disassociate themselves from the real world of feelings. I guess I don't have enough feelings. Kevin Durant's amazing. Amazing. And the fact that people aren't pointing out just how incredible a year he's having only proves his point of the sycophants in the NBA covering LeBron. But for LeBron and the Lakers, the chemistry is obscene. I'd be embarrassed if I was the Phoenix Suns at throwing out 18 points combined in their last two first quarters. You just start trading guys to Siberia, man. But I guess you become basketball Siberia. Suspend dudes. They don't want to guard. They don't want to play. Figure out a way to get guys to compete hard in that, because that, it's amazing. They drafted Josh Jackson. They signed Tyson Chandler. They drafted Mikal Bridges. All guys seen as chemistry guys, and their chemistry has not gotten better. It's gotten worse. Worse. They're awful. Awful. All right. We have a couple of amazing pods lined up. Eric Musselman's going to join us next week. Rusty LaRue is set to join us, tell you about his journey. Rusty LaRue might be the greatest athlete in the history of Wake Forest, and I know Tim Duncan played at Wake Forest. We'll get his story. He told me he's going to join me in a pod. I've got a bunch of people that have been texting me, hey, dude, I want to do a pod. Cool. We'll do it. We'll pump some more out. Hope you enjoyed it. Listen to the radio show, 3 to 6 Eastern Time on Fox Sports Radio. Also available on Sirius. It's on XM 203. It's 3 to 6 Eastern Time or 12 to 3 Pacific. Follow me on Twitter @Gottlieb Show or on Facebook, follow the Doug Gottlieb Show. This is All Ball.